All right. Kick off the third hour on this Friday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Steve Lehman alongside News Channel 5. Who or what is on your list? You've had all week to think about it. I want you to feel better about it. Justin Timberlake tickets on the line. Bridgestone Arena Wednesday, May 9th. Hot, hot, hot ticket. But you're going to have to get involved to win. 737-1025, 737-1025. Who wants to begin?
I can begin.
Okay.
On the list, all of the Maple Leafs fans in town last night who decide to have their little hootin' show after they win.
Hootin' show?
Yeah, you know how it is. They hoop it up after the game's over. We've seen it before. And it just bothers me. You come to another person's building. This is we could write. We've had our little storylines over the years of etiquette when you're in the other team's house. The Predators have had more fans at road games. It's an all-time high this year. It's not even close. They're starting to get a significant amount of fans in the other building. So I hope if there's some of them listening, I hope you follow these things. There is nothing wrong with rooting for your team in the road arena. Have a great time. Cheer when they score. Get it going. Have fun. To me, and this is just my opinion, it's kind of fun when there's a small cross-section of the other team's fan in there. It juices it up. It goes back and forth. But when the game is over, if your team wins on the road, you do not have a pep rally in the arena on the way out. Now, you want to go out downtown and have a great time? Get together with all the other fans from your city? Have a great time. Do it. But you do not taunt. You know, you don't go in there and start, hey, man, yeah, Toronto, yeah. You know, they're not the first team that's done this. But that bugs me. So all of the Toronto fans last night that I could hear in the concourse on the way out, just leave. Just go. Go out. Have your fun. Good win. Move on. Your team is good. Haven't been good in a long time. A couple years ago, I didn't see too many of you in the crowd coming down to Nashville when they were a lottery team. Now they're good. You show up. So don't act like you've never won a game before.
It's also game 73.
It's game 73. The Blues fans did this a few years ago. Remember that when the Predators weren't very good?
I'm fully aware of everything that you're talking about.
So to the Toronto fans that decided that they won the Stanley Cup last night, you just made the list.
And you've heard my speech many times. If you want to go to the bathroom in your house with the door open, go right ahead. It's your house. If you want to walk around in your underwear and leave the refrigerator door wide open in your house, you can do that. But you're not going to go to anybody else's house and act like that. Okay, you don't get up and get in their refrigerator. You don't get up and go to the bathroom with the door open in their house. Just treat it like your house. If you're not in your house, then treat it like you're in somebody else's house. That's the way you have to approach it. It's very simple. Like I said, if you want to act however you act in your own home, you can do it. As silly as it sounds, you can do it whatever you want. But when you go to somebody else's house, I don't think you act like that in somebody else's house. You don't take the same things you do in your home that may be a little bit silly or out there and do it in somebody else's house. So just treat it like you're in somebody else's house because that's really what you are. So
definitely.
I've said this before. Okay, here's mine. I've noticed this trend, and I don't know how long this has been out there, and I don't know if anybody else has seen this yet or not. And I don't really know how to do this without calling people out because it's restaurants, but this is just my latest experiences. So I guess I have to, just because that's where it happened to me, and I'm not saying it's not happening anywhere else, but it's where I've been. So recently I've had two trips to places where this has happened, and I'm just confused. Like, when did we get to this point? And why are we supposed to? Help me out. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Because I'm a pretty giving person when it comes to tipping and service. I understand how that profession works. And I try to always be cognizant of that when we go out to eat. especially if the service is good. But when you go to, let's say, Martin's Barbecue, and you go to the window and you order food, and then you get a number or whatever, or you slide down and your food comes up and then you take it to your table, or you go to Panera Bread and you order yet again right there at the counter, or now they have these machines and then you wait for your food to come up in the window. When you are paying for it, they're asking you if you would like to leave a tip. What am I tipping for? I don't understand. You just took my order. I'm not sure what I'm tipping for. Am I supposed to tip? I am, like I said, I don't even know why I'm feeling guilty, because I I'm very aware of this. I have been pressing no, and that's so unlike me. It's uncomfortable for me, but I'm
It makes pressing, you feel bad.
Right, I'm right. pressing
you have
no.
You have to have a little guilt trip on
right,
yourself.
Right, because I'm like, are they sitting there looking at this, and they've seen that yeah. I've pressed no tip?
Look at this guy, man. He's not even putting yes.
What am I tipping for? I gave you my order.
I'm also
or you typed in your order in the kiosk,
in. Yes,
right? You're not even
kiosk.
Getting. You're what? Not even dealing with a person.
At Panera, I did it on a kiosk. Like what? What am I tipping you for making my food? Well, I don't. And when did this start?
And who are you tipping? Is the other thing?
I don't know.
When you're at a table and you have a waitress or a waiter come and serve you, you at least know when you're tipping, when you get up at the end of the meal, who that tip theoretically is going to. When you're doing it at the counter, is it the person taking your order? Is it the person who delivers your food to you? Is it the dishwasher? Is it everybody?
Does everybody divide it up, I guess?
Does it go to the owner because there actually are no tips and you're just giving them it raises very good questions here.
I just, like, when you get service, you understand what you're tipping. If you have a server, you understand why you're tipping. I don't, and where did this come from? Have you guys experienced this?
Oh, for sure.
It's a dilemma. It's a tough dilemma.
I'm saying no, and I'm feeling guilty about it, but am I supposed to say, tip them $2 or whatever for taking my order?
No, I don't think you're supposed to or obligated to. I do think I've actually asked someone this before. Some places, the point of sale machine or whatever, that's just how it's programmed. And I don't know if either you can't get rid of it or they haven't taken the time to get rid of it, but that's just how it goes. They have the same machine, essentially, that any restaurant would give you when you run your credit card for a meal where you sat down with four people. They just haven't changed it when you're going up to order a smoothie at whatever place, so it may not be so much that they're trying to get you to tip as much as they just haven't taken the time to remove that line from whatever seat is. But
okay.
I'm totally with you. I've been to those places before and you're sitting there, you're like, gosh, am I a terrible person if I just click no?
That's the way I felt. So I don't think that we need to tip for ordering food at a window or on a kiosk. I don't understand why we're doing that. So for all the places, and like I said, I didn't single them out. It's just my past two experiences. I know there's other places that are doing it, but for everybody who is doing it, you're on the list.
I'm totally with you. I kind of just want to bump yours because I've certainly thought that before. But I'll do a quick one. John Calipari complains about the draw. It's murderer's row for Kentucky to try to get through and get to the Final Four. He thinks the world is against Big Blue Nation. Then the draw plays out, and it could not be more set up for this team to make it to the Final Four. And they lose to a 9 seed in Kansas State last night.
In Atlanta.
In Atlanta. In Catlanta. They lose. And not just do they lose, but after the game, he walks off the floor and doesn't shake anybody's hands. I think a few players followed, but not all of them, because I saw some of, like, Shake Gilgeous-Alexander for one, and I think Kevin Knox was out there. I mean, some of these guys who were 18-year-old kids who just suffered the worst loss of their life, they stayed on the floor and shook some hands of guys, but John Calipari didn't. And he said afterwards, he's like, no disrespect, they were celebrating. I feel good for them, actually. Come on.
He didn't shake Bruce Weber's hand?
I didn't see it, and I know for a fact it was a big deal after the game. They didn't shake several of the players' hands. So I don't know if it was not everybody's hand. I imagine maybe Weber's, but he didn't stick around to go through the handshake line when the K-State players came back and did it. And several of his players did. He basically said, I've got nothing to apologize for afterwards. They were celebrating. I'm happy for him, but I didn't need to stick around. So not just did he complain about the draw, then get gifted a great draw and lose, but then he didn't even stick around and show good sportsmanship and shake the hands of the K-State players. John Calipari, you just made the list.
All right. At JGray117 just tweeted me and said there are a couple of gas stations in his town that have tip jars at the registers. And he said that's a little ridiculous. I would agree. I would say
at the convenience store.
I would say to Jonathan, just swipe and go. Don't go inside. Who goes into a gas station unless you have to use the restroom or I guess you need something to eat or drink.
See, the one thing about the tip jar, though, is that doesn't feel as much like an obligation. It's there as if you think
In
case you think you got some incredible service and you feel like you want to out of the kindness of your heart or you got 7 cents back in your purchase and you don't want to carry it around in your pocket, that's what tip jars are there for. But when it comes on the receipt of which you have to sign, it just makes you feel uncomfortable. I'm totally with you.
You have to answer it. Like, you're right. You're not getting asked. You don't have to address the tip jar. While we agree with Jonathan, it's ridiculous to have tip jars at a gas station register. But you're not getting asked to put something in there. So you can ignore it. On this, you have to answer.
Right.
You have to either give a tip or you have to say no. And so that's where I have the problem.
And often they're standing there hovering over the machine as you're doing it. So they're actually looking at you as you're pressing no and telling them no. Your service was not good enough for me to tip.
He just said no. All right. We'll see how he likes his food. All right. Justin Timberlake tickets, Bridgestone Arena, Wednesday, May 9th. You just made the list. Tell us who or what is on your list. 737-1025. One person just fell off, so we've got one line available. Anthony in Hermitage, who or what is on your list?
First, Jared Stillman is on my list.
Okay. Why?
Why not?
Okay.
All right. Second, Yahoo Fantasy Hockey League, mine. I've made it all the way to the championship, and Laine and Tarasenko get hurt, and I cannot cut them because they're elite players, and I'm getting killed. Because I cannot. They should change that. Yahoo, you just made the list.
So
you just made the list.
You don't have a bench or anything, so you would have to cut them to fill their roster spot? You don't have a bench or injury reserve?
I do have a bench, but I need them because not everybody plays every day.
I hate to hear that. All right, Anthony, you feel a little bit better?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the call. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Got to have a bench. Yeah. Laine looks like he is not going to play Sunday.
Huh. Well, I wonder what other leagues would not have a bench in their league.
But we do have injury reserve, because I know where you're going with this. You're trying to take a shot at me, the commissioner.
The commissioner.
But we have injured reserve, where you can put injured players.
No, but I'm like the caller. I like
in a
having
a spot where you can replace them.
I think it's
and not
good.
Lose them.
I know, but I like having a league where, you know, a good hustling hardworking owner can put together a little bench and work your lineup a little bit every day. Not much flexibility.
Okay. All right.
I'm taking that to the commissioner. Oh, wait, you are the commissioner.
Yeah,
the draft is tonight.
You just did.
I finished. Am I bitter because I finished 11th last year?
Maybe.
Yes, maybe.
Possibly.
A little bit.
Maybe.
Yeah. I was in the cellar most of the summer. Did pass Chase McCabe late in the summer.
Is it showing right now?
Is it showing right now? Yes.
Yes, it is. At Caleb_4 on Twitter says, he had Chinese buffet ask him for a tip the other day. Once again, I guess maybe the buffet, you could say, don't sometimes they serve you drinks? Maybe they check on the table, they refill your. Still, that's a stretch.
Yeah.
It's a stretch. Now we're getting we're getting flooded with this. Now, what about grocery stores asking for a donation at the checkout? Yeah, I just had that. I literally just had that in the last 48 hours. That's a good one. 737-1025. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, you're up next. Who or what is on your list?
On my list are all of the online Preds fans who think they are the arbiter of what is a real fan and a fake fan. Things like commenting on real versus knockoff jerseys, or if people happen to leave a game early for whatever reason, lots of things. But it's like they have a list of rules, and if you don't follow these rules, you're not a real fan.
I like that.
That's so you just made the list.
They're kind of snobs.
Getting judgy.
What you're
getting
saying.
Judgy.
Yeah, snobs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I like that, Kathy. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd love to hear an example.
Hold on.
Kathy, do you have a good example of a recent one that got to you?
Oh, yeah, last night.
All right. So what was the complaint last night?
That people were leaving in the third period when we got behind 5-1. And okay. I mean, people had reasons. People, like, drive a long way. I had to go home and pack because I'm leaving this afternoon. Somebody had a sick kid. You know, like, well, if you don't stay until the end, you're not a real fan. Like, you know what? I go to 41 games a year, so whatever.
Wow. Good for you, Kathy. I hope you feel better.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Have fun on your trip.
You are allowed
Thank
to
you.
Have a life.
Right.
I mean, you could be a big-time fan, but you
Fandom's supposed to be fun.
Yeah.
When you put too many rules to it, it's not fun anymore.
Ease up a little bit.
It's like tipping. When you put too many rules to it, it's not fun anymore.
737-1025. John in Goodlettsville. John, who or what is on your list?
All right. University of Nevada head coach, you just made the list.
Oh, okay. Why?
So about 40 seconds left, Loyola has the ball, and they decide just to play the clock, play for a stop. They're down one. Well, they still had two fouls to give, and there's a chance for them to kind of break up, I guess, Loyola's plays, maybe have a couple fouls, just so you're prepared for at the end if you need to, you know, give those fouls. Well, of course, Loyola ends up hitting that three with 7 seconds left, and you're down by four. I think it was pretty silly not to use those fouls to give then and just at least try to break that up. And then you're scrambling to get two fouls with, 1.5 seconds left. And that's, you know, irregardless of the travel call at the end, that was kind of a bang-bang play. But, University of Nevada head coach, you just made the list for your poor end-game strategy.
You just made the list!
Musselman didn't take his shirt off last night, did he?
No.
wait a minute. Julian, was the young girl, did she cry? And they didn't have the
they didn't have her
camera
crying
shot of her
crying?
I did not see Mariah on the shot last night. I could not agree more with that, by the way. There was 36 and a half seconds left when Loyola got the ball back up by one, and Nevada had two fouls to give, and they played out defense. The only way you get the ball back with zero chance to win the game, the only way, is if you elect to play defense and they hit a three and you're down by four. And that is exactly what happened. But even if you get a stop, best case scenario, they miss a shot with 6 seconds left. You have to get the rebound, and then you have to go 94 feet in jailbreak style and score in 5 seconds. That is your recipe right there. You absolutely have to foul and prolong the game there, because the worst thing that happens is you're down three. If they make both free throws, then you get the ball back. So I 100% agree with that.
Loyola Chicago is in the Elite Eight of the NCAA tournament, and they have won by a combined total of 4 points.
It's incredible.
That is amazing.
Well, and even last night, you're also thinking another pattern is developing. Nevada is doing their thing. They make the run in the second half. You're like, this is exactly following the script, but then – Loyola's script, I guess, was a little bit ahead of Nevada's script.
Yeah. 737-1025. Doug, who or what is on your list?
This is Doug. Man, you opened up not just a can, but a keg on the tipping.
A powder keg?
And this is not what made the list, but it's been a pet peeve of mine. I go to a restaurant, let's just say they have peanuts on the floor, I get an order to go, and then they bring out the order. First of all, it's wrong. Then they go and correct it. Then they bring me my ticket and ask me, did I want to fill out for a tip? Well, first of all, it's to go, and you got it wrong. You got the nerve to ask me, do I need to fill out the form for the tip? How do you do that?
I have noticed carry out, too, asking for tips.
Yeah. But this is what's really going to make my list. You opened up a keg, dude, so get prepared for this one. all the Tennessee teams that failed in their tournament, UT men, UT women, Tribeca, nobody went far in their respective brackets.
Honorable mention MTSU. Tribeca won like four games. They only won like four games this year.
Yeah, honorable mention MTSU. Meanwhile, like I said, Loyola in the Elite Eight. So all Tennessee teams that jacked up everybody's bracket and failed to do well in their tournament, honorable mention NIT, MTSU, you made the list.
Okay.
You just made the list.
All right, Doug, thank you. He's angry about his bracket.
He even threw Trevecca in there. They're D2.
They won.
Just lump them all in there.
Four games. Five, six, maybe. They were not in any tournament play. No postseason play for the Trojans. Michael and Dixon, who or what is on your list?
Hey, yeah, so I'm just kind of going off of something that happened a while ago. You know, the whole Greg Schiano thing, but I'm not going to bring that really back up. UT Athletics is really on the list for how that expired. And then I've been thinking, whenever that was going on, the main thing that was being said was that, you know, you got to think of UT's history and tradition. That just kept being thrown out over and over again. And I may be alienated by my own fan base now, but I think we need to stop harping on history and tradition whenever tradition has become history. So that's why UT Athletics is now on the list.
Thank you, Michael.
You just made the list!
It's not been a good run these days. Been kind of going on for a while. Paul, who or what is on your list?
Oh, this is a risky move here, but I've got to put my wife on the list.
That is risky.
Oh, this is bold. Okay, but I think I have a justifiable reason, and here it is.
Tread lightly.
Last Friday, we were going to Florida for spring break for a long weekend. I was all jacked up after the Predators game, so I wanted to stream the show and listen all the way down there. So I put it on. And you guys do, you just make the list, which I love. And she wanted to call in to put me on the list for making her listen to 102.5 the whole way down there. In doing so, she drove past at noon the last exit with a restaurant in Alabama, so that really, really horrible stretch of road where there's nothing but like maybe a subway and a gas station that's scary. And I did not eat because my wife wanted to put me on the list. So, she's got to go on the list.
All right, Paul. Okay, thank you. We actually endorse that.
That's pretty good. Yeah. And we've all been there, right? You go, let's just go. Well, let's keep going. We got momentum going on the road trip. Let's take it one more exit down. Let's see what's at the next one. And there's nothing.
No man's
there's
land.
Nothing. It's a gas station.
Yeah, but more importantly,
maybe there's a subway attached.
Let's forget the food stuff. But more importantly, she was trying to steer him away from the show.
Yeah, wait a minute.
That's what's important here. So she should be on the list. Good for you, Paul. Morgan, who or what is on your list?
Actually, Paul that just called you is on the list because he just gave the story incorrect.
Wait a minute. Is this Paul's wife?
This is Paul's wife.
All right. Okay, do tell your version.
Okay. Two
Paul
sides to every story.
Because he was correct. We were driving to the beach. We're in Alabama. He's streaming your show, which I'm a huge fan of, and he is on my phone trying to get through to put somebody else on the list, and while he's on hold, we're kind of going back and forth, where should we stop, and he's driving, and I'm like, well, there's a place to stop, and he's like, no, I'm almost, it's almost my turn, so, like, let's keep driving. So he is on my list because he chose to keep driving. It wasn't that I was mad about listening to the show, it was mad that there was no place to eat when we finally stopped.
So you were hangry.
I was hangry.
Yeah. Okay.
It had nothing to do with you.
Okay, so where did you end up stopping for the food, though?
We stopped at Milo's.
Okay.
But he says it was kind of scary. Was it scary?
No, it wasn't scary. It was just horrible. We were both really sick after we ate it.
Ooh, that's bad. Oh.
Here's my question. Are you two both in the car together streaming the show today?
No, I'm at home. I don't know where he is.
Well, you got the last word. That was smart. You came in behind him.
Yeah, and is he welcome back now after putting you on the list?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll duke it out, I
guess. Figure it out, yeah. Well, Morgan, thank you for clearing that up. And I'm sorry that, saying that we thought that you didn't want to listen to the show. So
no, it had nothing to do with you.
Okay. Thank you, Morgan.
Good.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That is a first. Husband-wife team putting each other on the list.
That was strong.
All right, we'll come back with more. Gary Smith, before we get out of here in the final hour. Pick six in the final hour. Good stuff. We'll pick a winner. We'll be back with more. 102.5 The Game. Sometimes while sitting in my room, the plot thickens on You Just Made the List and Paul and Morgan. So just for everybody out there, because we're getting tons of reaction, just for everybody out there, we had no idea.
None.
It said Paul, and it said Morgan. It did not say husband. It did not say wife, or this is Paul's wife. It just, the next call up was Morgan. We had loaded lines, and Morgan just happened to be the call after Paul. So we had no idea that was the husband-wife duo of Paul and Morgan. Now, Paul has followed up from Morgan, his wife, calling in and putting him on the list. Paul on Twitter tweets at us and says, I respectfully disagree with my wife's version. However, I will accept being placed on the list.
It's very sporting.
I wonder what he's disagreeing about, respectfully.
It sounds like they're going to have a very interesting discussion when they get home this evening.
And they're not together. Morgan told us, she said, I don't even know where my husband is. I don't know where he's at.
Which also means, given where they were in the calling order,
that's crazy.
That they called in separately of each other.
Basically at the same time.
At the exact same time.
To rat each other
to
out.
To complain on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's awesome.
That's loyal listeners right there is
that
what
is
it is.
Fantastic.
They know what's going on.
And good for Morgan, because she did kind of clear the air, because I unfairly kind of dumped on her for saying that she didn't want to listen to the show. She said that's not the case. Gary in Springfield, who or what is on your list?
Well, number one is Holly Worley.
Okay.
And the way that she's running our women's basketball program into the ground. And 1A is Paul and Morgan for saving money with a marriage counselor and making you guys do it.
Thank you, Gary. Well done. We had some really good calls.
We did.
Let's talk about Holly Warlick. 57-0 was the Lady Vols record at home for an NCAA tournament game.
Had never lost.
Never lost. That came to a screeching halt this year. They've never gone back-to-back years ever and not made the Sweet 16. That came to a screeching halt this year. How are they going to handle Holly Warlick, which, oh, by the way, we must point out, did she not have the number one recruiting class coming into the season?
She did. I mean, to me, for that reason, she gets next year to see if those players take the next step and allow this program to get back to that next step. But the other part of this, too, is Tennessee probably has to realize what it is now in women's basketball. Pat Summitt, unfortunately.
Okay, what are they?
Well, yeah. Pat Summitt, unfortunately, is no longer there. And the way UConn is rolling, I don't think it's realistic for Tennessee to win a national championship right now. It is realistic for Tennessee to be a competitive team every year in the SEC, competing for a title there, and getting back to the second weekend of the tournament on the regular, and have a shot to get to a Final Four and maybe have that special team that can do other things. So I do think the expectations are out of whack, and what Holly Warlick has done at almost any other school in America would be viewed as a successful coaching run. It's not there because of who preceded her and the greatness that Pat Summitt was. So I do think expectations need to come back a little bit, but at the same time, she hasn't met even what the reasonable expectations should be. So they've got to do better. She's got to do better.
Well, leave UConn out of it. They're behind Mississippi State in the SEC. They're behind South Carolina in the SEC. This is in their own conference, which they dominated under Pat Summitt.
Yeah. I will be curious. Mississippi State, this is pretty much a two-year run of them being really, really good.
What's a hell of a run?
It's an awesome run. There's no question about it. But I'm not sure I'm ready to just say that they're up there forever. Now, South Carolina, under Dawn Staley, they've proven that they are the preeminent program right now in the SEC. And so, clearly, that program is head and shoulders above what Tennessee women's basketball is right now. I think I need to see Mississippi State do it for a couple more years before I necessarily put them in that category. But you're totally right. It used to be Tennessee and everybody else. Now it's South Carolina, Mississippi State. Kentucky didn't have a good year this year, but Kentucky's been historically really good over the last several years. Tennessee's just another team now.
Yeah, and I never thought we would say that.
No.
At least not any time.
Just another team. That right. sounds
I know.
Very.
It just doesn't even, it sounds yeah. weird to even say out loud, but they are. I agree. But here's what's probably working in her favor. How are you? You are never going to be able to replace Pat Summitt. Those shoes will never get filled, ever. Like, they're never going to have somebody on their sidelines that can have the program at the level and the clip and sustainability that Pat Summitt had for that window that she had, which was a long decades, right? I mean,
right.
So that's what's going for. Okay, so you want to move on from Holly Warlick? Okay, well. Who's going to – you're not getting another Pat Summitt. You're not getting another Geno. So where do you turn?
The only thing I'll counter with that is it's always better to be the person to replace the person who replaced the legend.
Of course.
And that's the case here is if Tennessee fans are so fired up that Holly Warlick isn't Pat Summitt, one, they're right. She's not. No one is. But if you get rid of her, then the person who comes in – they're then replacing Holly Warlick. They're replacing the person who has now missed the Sweet 16 in back-to-back years or finished seventh in the SEC. That's what they're replacing at that point, trying to sort of get the program back to greatness. They're not replacing Pat Summitt. So that job becomes much easier for whoever would take it at that point.
Which, like I said, I mean, how many candidates are out there to fill those shoes? And like you said, you're not replacing Pat Summitt. You're right, you're replacing Holly Warlick, but she's still got it at a pretty decent clip. It's not to the level that we've all been accustomed to over the years. It's fallen off significantly, but it's still at a pretty – it's not like they've – you know, Cameron Neubauer took over Florida this year and, you know, they bottomed out. I mean, and Florida's been good in the past too, and he'll have to rebuild that thing back up. But, I mean, you're talking about a pretty good level. It's not like they've bottomed out.
Is women's basketball the sport – where the head coach makes the most difference in the sense that, I mean,
I would probably say
the programs in the country, any program of real relevance in the country, don't you know who their coach is in women's basketball? I mean, if they're any good at all, if they've been to a Final Four at any point in time, don't you pretty much know who their head coach is? And if they haven't, you probably don't, just as a casual fan, because I think – you know, however far you want to extrapolate it out, whether it's 8 coaches or 10 coaches or 14 coaches or whatever it is, the elite programs in the country have one of those X number of coaches.
Well, what we don't have in the women's game is a Porter Moser. You never get the Loyola Chicago. You don't get what's happening on the men's side. It has happened in the past, whether it's George Mason or we can go through the list, right? I mean, remember Dayton's run? I mean,
VCU from the first
VCU,
four.
Shaka Smart and started in Dayton and went all the way to the Final Four. So you don't ever get that. It seems like it's the who's who.
Right. Butler played in back-to-back national championship
back-to-back
games. You know, Xavier's not going to the women's title game.
No.
It's just not.
It's just never. So to your point, it is about the coach. Because you never get – Why doesn't the smaller
school always,
that's ever
always fascinating
rise up
to me
and do
there
this?
Aren't, there isn't more variety of teams at the top or bigger pool. Or recently, even – I mean, it was a huge accomplishment last year to beat UConn, but by and large, UConn is always loaded and way better than just about everybody. And it just fascinates me that they can't break the cycle. Like, everybody's gunning for UConn, yet UConn still
wins by 60.
Well, it just always dominates.
Or is it 80?
88. Yikes.
Well, at least the Grizzlies only lost by 61 last night.
That was a tight game.
NBA. You lose by 61 in the NBA.
That's a lot. That's like getting beat 14-3 in a hockey game.
Yeah, basically. And they did it, which is, surprisingly enough, not the worst loss in the NBA.
You just reminded me of another restaurant pet peeve, by the way, with that Grizzlies game. I was at a place last night with some friends trying to watch the games, and this place probably has about 24 TVs in it, so it's a good place to watch the games. And there were essentially three games that everyone in the place wanted to watch, right? The two NCAA games and the Predators game. And the bank of walls right in front of us had three TVs on it, and they had the Grizzlies game on forever. And we were like, is anyone watching that? Because it's a 60-point game, and I think everybody wants these other three games. And the guy said, well, what game are you looking for? And we said, I think at that time it was the end of the Loyola-Nevada game. We were like, we're trying to get that game on. So he comes over, and he puts it on the TV that had the other NCAA game on it and left the Grizzlies 65-point loss on.
Come on.
Come on. Come on.
Get a strategy. Get a strategy. Remember we were talking to Kyle Tucker earlier this week, too. Golly, that drives me crazy when the sports bar doesn't put the right games on. If you're a sports bar, distribute your games.
What people want to
know what the games are. Come on.
Gary Smith, head coach of Nashville SC. He's next. First ever home game, Nashville SC, Nissan Stadium, Saturday afternoon, 5 o'clock. Back here on the show, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5. Alongside, we say hello to their head coach, Gary Smith, joins us. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me on.
You excited? First ever home game?
Oh, extremely. Yeah, we've been away all preseason other than 10th, which was a wonderful occasion, as we all know. So we're really ready for this, and it looks like it's going to be a very special occasion.
It is. We had Michael Reed on a couple of days ago on the show, your captain, and really impressed by just talking to him. He you know, we had fun with him. It was just a lot. And obviously, more importantly, you need to him produce. What does he bring to your team?
Well, I've worked with Michael before, of course, and you know, Michael's a terrific character, number one. He leads by example. He's one of those guys that every single day in the training environment, he brings a top attitude and a competitive spirit. He's also a very talented lad. If you look at the way that he plays in that midfield, he's very reliable. He has good individual quality on the ball. And on top of that, he's a bright, intelligent and appreciative individual of how we want to play. So when I had the chance and saw the opportunity to maybe bring Michael in, it was a bit of a no-brainer, really. And, of course, having players that have been around me before and understand what I'm after and the type of characteristics of the team that we're trying to put together here, that was a really nice piece to add.
You kicked off your season last Saturday on the road, a tough first game ever against Louisville. It didn't go your way. You guys were shut out. But what did you learn, Gary, about your team after game one?
As you said, a really tough encounter. When the fixture list came out, it certainly looked like it was going to be a real difficult test. We learned a lot about the group, as I'm sure we will as this season unfolds. And I truly believe that if I had the experience of being in a franchise that had just started, a brand new group before, then I'm sure I'd be saying exactly what I'm going to now, which is that this group of players will grow. They'll learn from their mistakes. They'll learn from each difficult game, each encounter that they have to try and overcome, for good and for bad. And it's those moments as you try and build that rapport as a team of individuals, that you start to see the better quality out of the team. So, you know, we learned that there are going to be some really tough days ahead of us. There are going to be some tough teams to play against. And as we showed on that occasion, that we have good determination, we have a great group of lads that have got true focus, And sometimes the result won't always go your way, but we certainly feel as though we can turn the tables on that this weekend. And over the course of a season, we feel as though we'll certainly come out on the good side of those results rather than the bad side on more occasions than not.
We're talking to Gary Smith, Nashville SC head coach. And, Coach, you got to be fired up about this game. There's a chance to set a record here for the USL's home opener for a new team. 20,231 is the record. As I look here, over 18,000 tickets have already been sold. So this has a chance to really be a special event.
It's a phenomenal undertaking and achievement already. I mean, if that record is broken, I truly believe, and I was saying, you know, just earlier in the week about the growth of soccer in this region and this southern region of the US. I mean, Atlanta's a great example of obviously what can be achieved. But looking at what the Predators and the Titans are able to produce and the way that the fans get behind those groups, I've only been here for a year. But when I look at what the community and the city are capable of achieving, I see no reason why, you know, not only can this record be broken this weekend, but for the group to go on and be one of the top supported soccer teams in the nation. There's no reason why that can't be achieved.
This is an interesting storyline for this game. You've got a couple of players on your team that used to play for Pittsburgh and another guy that used to play for their coach. So what factor, if any, do you think that is in this game?
Well, you can get a little bit of an insight into the coach's mindset and, you know, what he likes to achieve when he's on the road. I honestly think in this game, it's Pittsburgh's first, it's their first fixture of the season. You know, I'm sure that there will be some characteristics that come out in this group, but the coach is new to the group, to Pittsburgh. He has six or seven players from his old club. There will certainly be some similarities with how he's played before. That tends to be the case, but in all honesty, they're in a building process. I'm sure some of that stout and resolute defending that I've seen from Bob Lilly's teams will be evident. They certainly won't turn up and be easy to play around and play through and allow us to just enjoy the day. They'll be here to upset the excitement and you know, to really pour some cold water on what could be a fabulous day. So we know we've got a tough test. We have a tiny bit of insight into their group. But in all honesty, it will be about how we play, how we come together on the day, and what sort of creation are we capable of against a very stout and defensive type team. So, you know, we're in a good place. We feel confident. The lads are excited, of course, and, you know, we're ready to go.
This is going to sound like a dumb question, but it's a question relative to other sports. For example, in college basketball, there is a huge home court advantage statistically for home teams. There's a lot of upsets if you're just playing on your home court. Other sports, it's not as much. But what about soccer? I know in World Cup, the one thing that comes to mind for me, on the continent that the World Cup is played, it's almost always won by a team that is from that continent.
From there.
So what about a home field advantage in soccer in general? How much can a crowd sway a game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's far greater than that. If you look at most teams, they are in one way, shape or form trying to take advantage of their home turf, whether that's a team at altitude, whether that's a team in real, you know, heat conditions, whether that's a team that play on turf, whether that's a team with a small pitch or a really large dynamic of a pitch. You know, the team is normally recruited and suits those environments. And we're obviously in the early stages of that. We have to find a way for our home field to be difficult to come and play on and for us to be a very, very tough side to play on our home turf. And I honestly think that in these early stages, the crowd will be the biggest factor. While we're trying to find our way and tiptoe our way through those positives and how we warm to the First Tennessee Park and how we deal with Nissan Stadium, the crowd will be the determining factor. At the weekend, both ourselves and Pittsburgh are seeing Nissan Stadium for the first time. The big difference will be that there'll be nearly 20,000 or more people there that want us to win. So, you know, we really need that group of people to get behind us.
Gary Smith, Nashville SC coach, joining us here on 102.5 The Game. Coach, it seems like there have been so many milestones with this organization, just being formed, and then you have the game against Atlanta back in February, and you put this all together. Has it seemed like it's been a whirlwind to get to this game and the true regular season home opener, or has it crawled since that Atlanta game to get back to town and have this moment on the horizon?
To be honest, I think it's been a bit of a whirlwind for me personally, full stop. There's been so much happening in this last year since I got into town. The preseason has absolutely flown by. When the players got into town, getting to work with them practically and really getting the team shape and starting to form some identity in these preseason games as you know, just flashed by. The Atlanta game was a wonderful experience, only dampened by the weather, of course, but to see the way that everyone came out to watch our very first game was just so uplifting. You know, the confidence in the group grew from that. And when I look at where we're at right now, whilst there's still plenty of development to be had in our group, and there's still a pathway and a long road towards being successful in the USL, I think we're in a very, very good place. And, you know, it won't be long before everyone's talking about the next step and, you know, breaking ground on the stadium for MLS. And that will be the next, you know, whirlwind of press that's out there. But at the moment, the true focus is on USL, on winning games, on being successful and ultimately putting a product on the field that the fans are proud of and are excited to come and watch.
So last thing before you get out there tomorrow, I imagine it's been a little bit difficult with a new team to completely understand even what you have on the roster and with your team as you go through the preseason compared to if you had a already established roster and team. So what do you hope to learn tomorrow in game two in front of the home fans?
Well, on a much better surface, and Nissan Stadium will be a fantastic field to play on. I truly hope to see some of the qualities that we've been accustomed to during the preseason. We are a talented group. I'd love the players to be able to show 20,000 fans how talented we are. We have inspirational and creative individuals, and we have lots and lots of energy. And my hope tomorrow is that we can see again some of those characteristics in the side and we can win the game, because the one thing I can't do as a coach is instill that confidence which winning does. So a victory at the weekend and a very bright, exciting, purposeful performance would be wonderful.
Gary, we learned after the Stanley Cup final, go beat Pittsburgh. That's what the city wants. Go
that
beat
would be
Pittsburgh.
Nice.
Hey, always good to talk to you. I hope you guys break the attendance record. You get a win for the home crowd, and we look forward to talking to you throughout the season. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Gary Smith, he is the head coach at Nashville SC. Love talking to that guy. And
still tickets available. Go on out.
Yep.
Break the record.
Nissan Stadium, and that is going to be part of Pick 6. Yeah. Attendance, that will be a part of it. Just be listening. Got a great prize. Want you to get involved. 737-1025. We'll review last week, make our picks, and get your calls. That's next.